Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, the Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast. So if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. My guest today from Ohio in the USA, keynote speaker, author, specializing in stress management and goal achievement. And he's got three sons, two dogs and a cat. And I'm wondering, do the dogs attack the cat? We'll find out. Please welcome Phil Barth. Is that how I
got it? You got it. Yes. Yes.
Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So you might let the listeners know a bit more about Phil.
So I have been doing speaking as a side gig, I don't know, for 10 years or so. But in 2015, I had a heart attack. And I thought I was too young and in too good a shape and didn't smoke. And I didn't think I had problems that would lead to a heart attack. But the doctor said, you need to manage your stress. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't even realize how much stress I had. And once I started looking at it, I realized there was a lot of stress in my life. And I needed to do something about it. So what I started doing was looking for what's good in life, basically. I started a post on Facebook that, hey, here's the great things that happened today. And just little things. You know, we went to the zoo, or we ran into friends when we were shopping, or whatever. Just a list every day. And the gratitude that I was expressing there wound up kind of rewiring my brain and lowering my stress. And that became the first part of what has now been an 8-year journey of gratitude and learning what causes stress, what can we do to reduce the stress. And ultimately, it led to the book, Great Things Happen Every Day, which, hang on a second, got it right here. I love it because it's a picture my wife took of our youngest son on vacation. So he's kind of in a stress-free environment there. And that, I call it a best sort of seller, because when we put it out there, it was free on Kindle for 5 days. And in the 5 days, it went to number one on the Kindle stress management free book list. So I tell people I sold thousands of copies, earned zeros of dollars. So I'm not sure if you don't get any money, if you can count it as a sale, because my bank says you can't.
Well, the thing is, you're doing this in such a nice way, because the majority of people do the exact same thing to get the downloads. And they would say, I've got a bestseller that's been to number one. They wouldn't give the full story. So fair dues for actually being honest about it.
I'm being honest. And it's funny, right? Humor reduces stress. And so people can relate to it. And then frequently when I speak, you get a certain number of free Kindle days per quarter. I have the Kindle book free again. I tell people, hey, get me back to the top of the best sort of seller list. Go out there and download it for free.
Brilliant. So when I was younger, I used to have a cat and a dog, and the cat used to sleep on top of the dog, and I love both of them. And people would always ask you, are you a cat or a dog person? Looks like you're the same. You're both.
I'll be honest. My wife likes cats a little bit more than I do. I'm a dog person. The cat and probably any cat rules the roost, because the dogs will play with it one time and get a big claw in the nose, and then they let the little cat rule the house and they stay away.
Cats definitely are a lot more independent. I think that
oh yeah,
if we croaked in the morning, the dogs would lay next to us and probably die, but the cat would go off and farm it, you know, create its own life.
Yep. Yeah. The dogs are like, oh, you're so wonderful, feed me. And the cat is like, oh, I'm so wonderful, feed me.
Exactly. You've been on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I
And
have.
I'd love to know, one, how did you get on the show and how was the whole experience for you?
Okay, so this was an obsession. When I talk about goal achievement, I talk about getting rid of the little chickens in your head that are telling you you can't do it, you're not good enough. And I have a whole bunch of rubber chickens that I give away. I actually, before we get there, I actually now have my business card on a rubber
Oh,
chicken.
brilliant. I love it.
That QR code actually will take you to philbarth.com.
That is fantastic.
At any rate, I then tell the story. I tell a few stories about getting rid of fears, but one of them was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Because when it first started, it was phone auditions, and they had 200,000 people calling in every night, and only 10 made the show. And so, one in 20,000 are the kind of odds where the chickens are in your head going, "Don't even bother. Don't even bother. You're not good enough. They don't want you." And I never got on the show from the phone audition, but what I started to do was I auditioned in cities. So I flew to Chicago, and the way it worked was they had a test, multiple choice test, but it was questions that had already been on the show, and I watched every single show. So I always passed the multiple choice test. Then they would give you a form to fill out with short answers to questions, and then you would interview with a producer, an associate producer. So I failed in Chicago. They tell you some of you will get a card in the mail saying you're going to be on the show. Well, I didn't get it. So I went to Indianapolis, Indiana, tried again, passed the test, interviewed with the producer, failed. So I took some time and I actually went out, and this was before Google was so prevalent, but I went out to message boards and learned how people were passing the audition. And what it was when they gave you the form to fill out, they would give you a number two pencil. And what I learned was don't use their number two pencil. Bring four color pens, highlighters, and so on, and draw the associate producer's eyes to the story you want to tell. And the story you want to tell is the one that they can see you sitting across from the host, Meredith Vieira at the time, telling. And so I had a couple of stories in red. They picked one, we talked about it, and I got a card in the mail later and wound up on the show. And the story was, we were watching the show when Regis Philbin was the host. My son was sitting there with me, and Regis Philbin was like, "Come on down to the hot seat. Next up in the hot seat. Welcome to the hot seat." And my son was about five at the time. He looked at me and goes, "Daddy, how hot do they make that hot seat?" And Meredith Vieira wanted to talk about that. And then she asked me how my buns were, which I thought was kind of a compliment. I don't know. And that's what got me on the show.
And is it because I haven't seen the US one, but I've seen the UK where there's a lot of people sitting around and then there's like a multiple choice and it's whoever gets first. Did they have that system?
They did at first, but by the time I got there, it was a syndicated version in the US. So if you got selected to be on the show, you were going to be in the hot seat. It was just a matter of time.
So what was
Which
it
was.
like? What was the whole experience like when you
Oh.
were?
So, and that made it interesting. I always wondered, if you're sitting there in a room full of people and only a few of you are going to be the fastest one, you would view them as competition and you probably wouldn't want to talk to them. But we all knew we were all going to get a turn. So we wound up making friendships in the green room because you're rooting for everybody. And eventually they bring you out and they say, "All right, you're sitting here because the somebody's in the hot seat right now," and we never know. They never know if they're going to miss the first question or go all the way. So you sit down and wait because they want to be able to call you out just like that. And so I got my call out. The first 10 questions, I knew nine of them and asked the audience for one. And they tell you ahead of time, they say, you need to decide, are you going to be conservative and just try to walk away with, $8,000 or $16,000 or whatever and spend your lifelines early? Or are you going to go for it, potentially make big money, but also potentially make nothing? And my wife and I talked, and I said, "I'm going to be conservative." It was like 3 years of nonstop effort, because once I found out I was in the pool, then it became everywhere we go, I was l reading trivia and my wife was asking me questions and so on. So I said, all this time I put in, I need to make a decent chunk of money. So I'm going to be conservative. And it was actually Michael Davies. He's from Scotland, the founder of the show, that talked to us and told us the whole, you need to decide how you're going to play. I'm like, dang, I'm getting advice from the guy who invented this show. It's impressive. Anyway, so I got in there and I made it to $32,000. At the time, $32,000 was a lock. So I had $32,000 no matter what. The $64,000 question came up. I still had two lifelines. My phone a friend didn't know it. I used the 50-50 and I guessed incorrectly. And I was backstage going, oh man, I should have known, da da da. And my wife came back and she goes, we just got $32,000. And it was like, it hit me. I'm like, oh yeah, we did, didn't we? Well, that's good money.
Brilliant. And what I love is actually you were intentional about doing it, whereas a lot of people, they just try to wing it or just try it. But if you're really or laser focused on what you want in life, whether it's, you know, a lot of these shows or reality, whatever, if you want to do something, you put the energy and you decide, I'm really doing this. And usually it will happen if you really are laser focused.
That is part of my message. You got to find it. Well, I call it the big, bold, brilliant idea. The thing you really want, the thing that'll get you up first thing in the morning, and you'll pursue it to the point of obsession. And if you do that, you'll be successful and you ignore those chickens. And I also have one other chicken I use to get the message home. Oh, he's a bit louder. I don't know if you can hear him or not, but I say, this is the one you need to be afraid of. I call him the red rooster of regret, the fear that you will not do what you were designed to do, the fear that you had a chance and now you're sitting there, what if I had tried, I could have done this, I could have, I should have, I would have, and you don't do it. That's what you need to be afraid of.
Excellent. And like, when you're like speaking and everything, when did the chicken thing come in and when did you realize, hey, this is actually serving me?
That's a really good question. I had the chickens, but I would just pretend to be a chicken. And a friend of mine who, at work, showed the video, and then he called me down and he said, I want to give you something to recognize your great speech. And he gave me a rubber chicken. And I was like, this is brilliant. Because this represents your fears. And if you're looking at him as a little rubber chicken, it makes them seem not so bad, which is true. They are not that bad. So I don't know when that was. That was 2017, 2018. And then I started buying them because the first one met its untimely demise at the mouth of a dog. And the dogs are locked up, by the way, because when I start getting these chickens out there, they think it's playtime. And so then I bought some more of them, and then people gave me some. And when I realized you could have these little ones and give them away to the audience, and then they became the business cards, and people love them. And I come in, when I come in for my keynote, I just start tossing them to the audience. I tell a couple people in the back, look, I'm going to be throwing chickens. Please don't act like you're under heavy fire. And when I throw them, they catch them. Then everybody stand up, give me one. And everybody's laughing because we got these silly little chickens and we're off to the races.
Brilliant. And like you can see in my screen there, like I have the QR code for my thing, but also a guy that's helping people with anxiety. And before QR codes, I thought it was going to disappear because it was, you had to have a special app and and now it's become so easy. Like even people when they're on stage, they just do something like that. You go take a picture and you've got all of their social media. So even like, no one's going to throw away that chicken. So you,
right.
Like, because people don't use business cards anymore. There's even ones that are kind of like, they're like a metal thing and that people just scan it. But for something like that, you're giving it away. So not only is that person getting it, but the curiosity of those that surround them, it's a fantastic marketing tool. I love marketing and I commend you on that one.
Thank you. And to be honest, I fell into it. The guy gave me that first rubber chicken, and all of a sudden I realized these are really cool.
Brilliant. So, like, I'm a Toastmaster. I'm no longer a member, but you have done fantastic in Toastmasters. You actually got to number 9 in 211, I believe, and then number 20, which people don't realize how many people actually compete for these competitions and what you need to do and go from round to division and just constantly.
Yes.
So you might tell me your Toastmaster journey.
Sure. So 2011, it was that chicken story that took me to the finals. So I was top 9. And I believe any year it's between 20 and 30,000 people that start. So I made it to the top 9 and I competed in Las Vegas. In 2018, I made it to the semifinals, which was the, top 120 or something. And I finished second in my semifinal. There were 10 semifinals. So I said top 20. The person who beat me wound up being the world champion of public speaking in the finals. And in between that, in 2015, I was in the semifinals again, and I burned the candle at both ends and stressed out and did all the practicing and had the heart attack 1 week before I would have gone to the semifinals.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then I told my wife, I said, I think this is going to be a quick recovery. We could probably still go. And she just looked at me like, you are so dumb. And she was right. The recovery was, 9 months or so. So somebody else had to fill in at the last minute. But again, life is what you make it. And that heart attack was what turned me into kind of an expert on stress management. So it's all about what you do with what happens to you.
Absolutely. Just on the competitions, because one, you might let us know a little bit about how you're preparing, because some people are, there's a lot of people in Toastmasters that have either been on it or listen to the show. But also, I know that when you get to the final, you have to do a different speech as well when you're actually in the, and it's like, do you bring your A speech or your A plus speech? And I'd love to know, what was your thought process each time?
Completely different in the 2 years. So 2011, or in the 3 years, 2011, I took my A speech all the way because I kept trying to figure out my final speech. And I finally came up with something 10 days from the finals. And you have to win in the semifinals to get to the finals. And I knew that the only way I was going to get to the finals was with my A speech. So that time it was easy. 2015, I had another speech that had made it. And at the time, you were allowed to use a prior speech in the finals. So I said, all right, I've got my new speech that will hopefully take me to the finals. And then I've got my speech that got me to the finals in 2011 that I could use in the finals. Had the heart attack, so that didn't work. 2018, I wrote another speech, and I now had two speeches that had never been to the finals, and I was still trying to figure it out. What I ultimately did was I took my first speech to the semifinals, and then I used the one from 2015 in the semifinals and finished second. The first speech, I chickened out. It's a really good story, and I really love telling it, but it all centers around the fact that I get stung below the eye by a wasp, and I say, my vocabulary shrunk to 15 words, and 5 of them were dirty. And so instead of saying the words, I use the numbers. So I'm like, oh, son of a one. And then my kids are standing off the side. And they say, uh-oh, dad's about to say 5. And I talk about that. So I was like, if I get the wrong set of judges, they're just going to say, no, this is completely wrong. And I probably should have gone for it. I mean, come on. It was a fun speech. I have not yet worked it into a keynote. I have to have the right audience, because I told a couple of people, I was like, look, if the audience is right, I've got this one, here's how it plays. And they're like, that's probably not going to work with our audience. You know, we got a lot of bankers or whatever. It's like, okay, we'll go with this direction.
And did you notice, like, because what I mean, I got into the final of 5 countries, and it was like just kind of how it evolved from when you were in the club level to down the end, how much it improved. And it's like, if I did this with all my speeches, how good they could be.
Oh, absolutely. When I made the finals the first time, I had given a total of 40 speeches to get to whatever I was, advanced communicator gold or whatever it was, 40 evaluated speeches in 10 years. I did that speech for the finals at least 40 times in 3 months. And I said, I basically aged 10 years in 3 months because I spoke so much. But yeah, you keep working it and working it. And that's the other thing about what I have, with my keynotes is I have two or three speeches that went through that process, where you are working it and working it and working it. And then I've taken my other speeches through a similar process, but I learned how to do that because of Toastmasters. And I learned you have to practice, not to the point where you just where it's a memorized speech, but to the point where you can tell your story in an enthusiastic way to the audience and get the audience behind you.
What I found is, because I was doing the same, I was kind of going to different clubs just to get the feedback. And the beauty of the Toastmaster system is, you'll have the evaluator of your speech, but I mean, I don't know, were you doing this, but I was basically asking everybody in the room, listen, give me feedback because I'm trying to. And the things you learn, because, there's always somebody, and they mightn't be even an experienced Toastmaster. They could just spot something and you're going bingo, and you're just little layers that you're just constantly to lead a fantastic speech.
I had a lady who was in her first Toastmasters meeting, came up to me afterwards. She goes, "I almost hate to say this, but I have one piece of feedback." And she gave me the feedback and everything clicked. I was like, "That's what's wrong with this speech." And it was her first meeting. I was like, that's where it's not connecting. And I rewrote that piece and everything worked.
So you're involved with the NSA, National Speakers Association, as well, yeah?
I am in the Columbus area, the Ohio NSA.
So,
So.
like I don't know how you've done a kind of combined events or workshops just from the forums that I filled. So I'm just curious how you've done stuff with them.
So we are actually putting on a workshop in October, and it's kind of speaking skills for people who don't speak for a living, right? NSA is people who speak for a living and you're trying to get the certified speaking professional, et cetera. This is going to be an event to bring in, everybody communicates for a living, whether they want to or not. And you may have to speak and you may have to give presentations. So we're bringing them in and talking about presentation skills. And I've got two pieces of it. One is I'm going to interview a panel of speakers, so we're working together so that I can give them the questions they want to give and get the responses and take it in that direction. That's going to be fun. I was in a meeting with one of the ladies yesterday, and I think my challenge will be in that interview is to keep everything on time, because once you get a speaker going or a Toastmaster going, getting them to stop is sometimes difficult. And then the other piece is it's called the Meet the Pros table. So there will be about 10 tables with professional speakers there, and people come around to the tables. And so I'll be talking about what do you do before you go on to kind of calm the nerves, fry those inner chickens, whatever you want to say. What are the tricks an hour before, a day before, and 1 minute before? And what I do to go through that and kind of get their ideas. Some of them may have some ideas about
So that's a brilliant
what to handle.
question that you've just given me now for yourself to answer.
So what do I do? Well, first off, let's go way back. When I'm structuring the keynote, it's going to be stories that I've told 100 times or 1,000 times, stories about my family, stories that if you and I were sitting somewhere, I would be telling you this story and you'd be telling me a story. So that makes it so easy. I don't have to memorize a 60-minute keynote. I have to tell my stories and connect them to points. So easy. And that puts me in a comfort zone, because I'm not making things up. I'm not quoting great studies. I'm doing what people want. We're wired to hear stories, so I'm comfortable about that. What do I do day of? I don't eat much before I speak. I won't have a big meal. I don't know if it matters or not, but I'm kind of a little bit nervous, so I have just a little bit to eat. I drink lots of water. I have as many bottles of water on the stage as they will allow me, because I don't want my mouth going dry in the middle of the speech. And just before I go on, I kind of, you're back behind the audience probably somewhere, and I just mentally say, "Let's play." I stole that from Drew Barrymore. When she goes to do a movie or something, she's like, "This is play." So I just tell myself and I tell the people I'm acting with, "Let's play. Let's have fun." And so that's in my mind, I'm telling the audience, let's play. We are going to have so much fun. And that puts me in the right mindset.
Brilliant. And like with Let's Play, you obviously like roller coasters, yeah?
That is one of my stories. The roller coaster ride I took at age 45, I think it was. And I used the chickens in the story because the whole time we're going up and down the hills, the chickens are like, "You fool, you're too old for this." And you know, I squeeze them a little bit. And I actually, you want to talk about stepping out of your comfort zone and frying your chickens. I actually sing in that. The chickens sing to me for a little bit. And I'm a terrible singer. But at the start of the keynote, I have a 1 minute reel of highlights of with family, things that lowered my stress, things that were exciting, et cetera, silly pictures. And the music underneath it is the William Tell Overture. You know, da 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 da. And it's done by my son with a kind of a rock guitar, drums, etc. He put it all together. And so in the end, the chickens are singing the William Tell Overture to me on the roller coaster. So it's like, gonna puke, gonna barf, gonna lose your lunch. That depends, the adult diaper, or attends, because I've got a hunch that the next 2 hours are gonna be the worst if the ride doesn't kill us first. And people think it's great. And probably because it's funny and I'm singing, but it calls back to that initial opening and I get applause for singing something I never thought would happen.
And like, how important is incorporating humor into everything that you're doing when you're on the stage?
You've probably heard the quote, you don't have to use humor unless you want to get paid. For me, it is absolutely critical. Part of managing stress is you need to laugh and you need to laugh more. In my stress management keynote, I warn people ahead of time, I said, there are pictures in here that I have taken that do not relate to the point I'm making, but we're gonna throw them up there because they're funny. And the biggest point in this, if you take nothing else away, is you need to laugh more. And so the pictures come up, every story I tell, you know, I'm putting myself in the roller coaster and all the fears. And then there's one about asking my wife out on the first date and all the chickens are like, she's too good for you, et cetera. And she is. But all of that is relatable humor. It's always about me. You know, you can't make fun of other people. You can always make fun of yourself. And I go for as many laughs as I possibly can. I've always loved to laugh. I've always loved to make people laugh. I spent a lot of time after school in detention because I was trying to make people laugh. But that's who I am. The other reason I like humor is it tells you early on the audience is with you. When I give a Toastmaster speech, I want something funny in the first 30 seconds. And then they laugh and I'm like, okay, now we're gonna have fun. We're good. We're all gonna laugh. And so on.
Just so curious, because with especially the online version as well, but I remember as I was going through the rounds, the more people in the audience, the more you have to allow for the laugh. And that caught me. I was panicking at the end because I was like, I'm running out of time here because I wasn't expecting them to be laughing so much.
Same thing. I almost went overtime. I was like 7:28. And
for those that don't know, you've 7:30 is the red flag.
And I had one of my mentors saying, you've got to cut this down. You were almost out. And so from then on, I would allow for more time. And I also had what I called the exit ramp. So if they have been laughing like crazy people, I'm not going to say, stop laughing. I've got a speech to give. I'm going to let that go. And if I have seen, and for those who aren't familiar with the contest, you get a green light at 5 minutes, a yellow light at 6 minutes, and a red light at 7. So if I see the yellow light at this point in the speech, I know I've got to skip this little bit right here to get done by 7:25 or 7:20. And so you build that in.
And have you ever done open mic or tried to go on comedy stages with?
I have not. I don't know why. I was always, when I was younger, I was concerned with hecklers. Now I'm not, that doesn't concern me. I actually had a lady at a keynote this year that just kept like she had to keep speaking. And I finally stopped and kind of looked at her for a second. And she got the message. It's like, oh
I
yeah,
thought you would have hit her with a chicken.
well, she had gotten a chicken at that point. And so, yeah, I talked with her afterwards and we had a great conversation, but she just was wired that way that I'm going to keep speaking while you're speaking. And when I paused for a second and just kind of looked at her, she got the message without making a big deal about it. And I don't think it was intentional. You know, you get, if you're on an open mic night or a professional comedian, you can get those drunks in the audience who want to take you down, and they're specially trained to just wipe them out. And I'm not, so I've never tried it. Doesn't say I, that's not to say I never will, but.
Okay, and just on the like the book and the stress, have you kind of give a few tips for people to kind of watch how they can reduce their stress?
Sure, I have a sheet. It's on the website, philbarth.com. Look under downloads. It's the 9 S's for successful stress management. And the first one is seek the good. What I wound up doing when I was looking for great things every day was I was looking for what's good. And the more you look, the more you find. And I say, seek it, and then you're going to see it. It's just going to automatically, good things are going to present themselves to you. And then the other thing I tell them to do is save it. So you've got this phone, right? If you see something that makes you smile, makes you laugh, whatever, take a picture. And then make it your favorites. My phone is actually connected to, I've got an iPhone and a MacBook. So my favorites are on my screensaver, and my favorites are my background. So on the other screen right now, I've got a background of my wife and I on the beach. It's one of my favorites. It'll cycle every 30 minutes. You just put that in front of you. That's one. The other one is subtract what's bad. And I talk a lot about social media. I love Facebook because I can see pictures of my niece's kids in Florida, which I couldn't do otherwise. I can connect with people I grew up with who are, you know, at least 4 hours away. Some of them are all over the country and can connect. But Facebook can also be a place where everybody argues about everything. And if you're not careful, you'll sit there and read it. And I believe that Facebook watches what you read and gives you more of it because they make their money by having ads. Right? You're talking about something, they hear it, and they're, here's some ads for this, which is a little creepy. So I just blitz through that, or I block those people to keep Facebook as a positive experience. And once I start doing that, Facebook's going to give me more of it. So subtract what's bad in your life. Share the love. You know, tell somebody thank you for what you did. Send them a note, something like that. It'll make them feel great. It'll make you feel great. Music is a big part. I think it's sing a song or something like that. It just, when you play a song that you're familiar with, you actually go back to that time. I can, my dad passed away in 2019 and I started listening and it was a long illness and I knew he was better off because he had been so sick for so long, but I was obviously upset about it. And so I put on Waylon Jennings, not the country music star, not that he's great at stress management. It's just that when I heard the songs, it took me back to a time when dad was driving and we were going on vacation and he was listening to Waylon Jennings. So playing music can be a great way to it's step back in time, sing a song, and so on. And there are others, but those are the big ones. Oh, silliness, laughter, dad jokes, you name it. Something to get yourself laughing. And if you do that, that's all, it's really all a subset under what's good in life and focusing on what's good and subtracting the bad, your stress is going to drop.
Brilliant. And like just with, I mean, I think you have Spotify in the US, but basically you can make your, and you can have even different ones, but then you just listen to the songs that you like. And you know, you mentioned the social media. I mean, I'm straight away, because people have the tendency, they could get 100 hearts and someone writes something negative, and that's all they think about and talk about. Whereas I'm the opposite. I see something negative. I mean, even on the Polish one, the amount of times there's people write terrible, it's deleted immediately or reported. I don't give it the energy. And it's like, because what you can do as well, sometimes we have a blues day. So make the note of all the beautiful messages that you've got and just look at that. And that will just straight away switch you out of that moment that you're like feeling down.
100%. That's exactly right.
Brilliant, brilliant. So, I mean, you mentioned the social media. So, just finally, because I mean, with what you're doing, What do you think serves you best? Because there's so many different things, the TikTok, the Snapchat, the whole lot, the YouTube and everything. As a speaker, what do you think is the best?
As a speaker, I think it's LinkedIn because it's professional. It gives me a chance to talk about, here's where I'm speaking, here's what I'm thinking about for stress management. This is how I'm branding myself as the expert in stress management and goal achievement, and putting the articles out there, getting people's opinions, getting surveys so I can check with my network. What do you think about this? And it's the professional network. I love Facebook because as I said, I connect with friends. But and I put rubber chickens on both of them, so you have that. And YouTube, I like YouTube. I have YouTube videos. I have a YouTube channel. I don't use it as much as the others in terms of putting my material out there. Probably don't use it as much as I should. But those are the three. I know other people use Instagram, TikTok, etc. I had to focus on three, Twitter or X or whatever Elon's calling it. I don't do much with those because you only have so much time. So I focus professionally, LinkedIn, friends, Facebook, and social proof like videos and things like that are on YouTube.
Brilliant. And just from the Facebook, I mean, I've seen one of the all the stuff you put up is kind of humorous, and it's kind of you can see the sense of humor coming through. But what, like I saw one with the car with all the rubber chickens on it. It's like, who needs sensors when you got that? Like, I mean, you can get as close to the wall, it'll work better than any sensor.
It's the cheap way of doing
Exactly.
it. Excuse me.
So thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. You might let I know you mentioned the website, but you might mention it again, and then any other handles that you'd like people to find yet.
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook, YouTube. The easiest way to do it, you don't even need to go to the show notes, although I would appreciate putting in the show notes. Books, the whole thing, go to philbarth.com. The website has links to everything. I didn't develop it, so it's really good. I kept saying, you know, I've got an IT background. I ought to develop my own website, and I tried. And you know what? I just wrote a check, and it was so much easier, and it was done, and it looks way better than anything I could have spent the rest of my life and wouldn't have gotten it right. So sometimes that's the other thing about stress management. There's times when you just have to say no to things. This does not serve me. Chuck it in the volcano. And being a web developer was one of them. It's like gone. So philbarth.com.
Perfect. Yeah. And it's a fantastic website. I mean, I've went in through all of it and it's very good. So listen, thank you very much. And I just encourage people as well, when they get your book, whether it's free or not, make sure you give a 5-star rating because it really helps. And then we'll get you to the number one, not the free version, maybe if they buy it, because there's some beautiful comments as well. So thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you.
So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes at speakingpodcast.com. Until next week, take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.